All right, we're in C Sharp World. Mads Torgerson, how are you doing?
Doing great, how are you?
Good. So the last time we had you on Channel 9 was at the Tech Ed New Orleans.
Yep.
And we had a gang of you guys on stage, and we talked a little bit about async. That's what we were calling it back then.
Yep.
So, you know, now that you guys have released the CTP, people have probably watched the sort of introductory stuff. Now we want to kind of dig deep into what it is and how it works. So take it away. What have you been up to?
Well, so since way before Tech Ed New Orleans, we've been working on how exactly to help people with asynchronous programming.
Yes.
Now, why do people want to do asynchronous programming at all? Mm-hmm. The major problem that a lot of people are facing, say you're in a client app, it's very, very easy to get yourself into a situation where you write an app that's just not responsive. Mm-hmm. Like you have a single thread that's supposed to deal with everything in the UI. And if you happen to put something on that thread that takes a long time, well, the UI is not going to respond.
Yes.
And with today's language features and framework, it's quite hard to get around that. Like we say to people, just go asynchronous, but doing that is hard.
Yeah.
And what so the sort of overall goal for this is make asynchronous programming easy. And you know, one of the catchphrases is no more callbacks.
Wow. Okay.
At least not in your face. Right? So the callbacks are behind the scenes now, which is callback-based programming is really what trips people up for the UI, making responsive UIs, for making scalable servers everywhere where threads are precious.
Yes.
And you don't want to waste 97% of your thread time with a thread just staring down a pipe waiting for something to come. Right. Mm-hmm. You want your threads to be active, like. People, threads should be active and do work, exercise the CPU. And asynchronous programming helps you do that. We help make asynchronous programming easy.
Excellent. Now, of course, we're talking about at the language level, right? You've added new...
Yep. We're talking about a language feature. We're talking about a new asynchronous pattern for the frameworks. So all the existing asynchronous functionality can be exposed in a simple way that the language can then use and help you compose asynchronous functionality. Okay. Like write asynchronous operations based on others, easily write top-level event handlers that spawn things that'll keep trickling onto the UI thread in a very easy manner.
Excellent. Now, just so people can see this on the whiteboard, I mean, you have your sort of, I guess, the your tagline, or there's an important word, await,
yes.
And task. These are things, at least the task aspect, we've covered a fair amount on Channel 9 with Stephen Tobe and people over in PCP world. So this is task-based parallelism.
Well,
is that fair or not?
Parallelism, not so much.
Perfect.
So tasks are a wonderful type, and they're already out there in .NET 4.0. Mm-hmm. And they're mostly, like today, the samples we have and the sort of things it's been tuned for and shown for is mostly for parallelism. So it's easy to create a task that runs on a thread pool thread. You give it a piece of work, and it goes off and does the work on a thread pool thread when it can get one, mm-hmm. and it comes back and sort of completes the task. The task then wraps that work, and you can hand out the task immediately while the work's still ongoing. People can look at it and say, is it done yet? Or they can sign up a callback, or they can wait for it synchronously by calling a wait method on it, blocking their own thread. Mm-hmm. In various ways, they can wait for the task to complete and then get a result. And they can create new tasks from old tasks and so on. It's a very versatile type that is currently mostly being used for parallelism, for this thread pool thread thing.
Okay.
But there's nothing actually about the task that ties it strongly to the thread pool. It's just an easy way to create tasks that represent thread pool work. Like if you have CPU-intensive work, you want it to run in the thread pool and you want a task to represent that work. But you can also equally easily create tasks that... that wrap a piece of work, a logical task or activity, if you will, that doesn't do much on the CPU and shouldn't have its own thread for that span of time. For instance, a request over the web. It's like that's sort of the typical example to pull out. You ask something over the web, eventually it'll come back with a result. Well, that's also a task, and you can wrap that in a task too. And when people look at that task, you hand it out to people, they look at it, they can see, oh, eventually I'll get a string back. But they have no way of knowing, and they shouldn't have a way of distinguishing whether that thread is produced by a CPU thread churning away at some difficult computation, or it's just coming down from the web and just waking up the task when it's done and telling all the people that are clients of the task that, hey, we have a result.
Excellent.
So it's an abstraction over activities that are ongoing and that will eventually complete.
Cool.
Regardless of whether they're CPU intensive or whether they're I/O related or network, whatever.
Excellent. I mean, because I think that's a good point, right? I mean, it's sort of why I asked the question was the distinction between asynchrony, thank you, and parallelism, right? Because we all think about, you know, we want to break up large computations, do them in parallel, get it done faster. We can do that on the client. Your example was perfect. I make a web request, doesn't do anything on the CPU. It's not parallel. It's just asynchronous.
Right.
So that's really good. I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to ask now is, like, what exactly did you do? So how does this work? What's going on here? Talk to us about
and
sync.
So people may have watched some other introductory videos.
Yes, they have.
So I'll try to go quick. There are two components to it, as I briefly mentioned. There's a new pattern in town for how asynchronous functionality should be exposed in our framework and in people's own programs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a language feature that makes it easy to consume and create asynchronous operations through tasks.
Excellent.
Okay,
so let's use the black marker, my friend.
Black marker.
Yes.
Well, I have one of those. I'm
yes,
very
you do.
I have only one black. Hope it works.
It'll work.
So let's see. To give a brief example of what the new pattern looks like,
mm-hmm.
You could have something like, let's say, download data. That's a method on Web Client today that synchronously downloads some data from that web client from a URL. And synchronously means when you call it, you sit and wait for the data to come down, which is typically not what you want. The thread is blocked.
Yes.
Okay, so we put in a version, at least in the CTP, that's called download data async. And instead of returning a string, which is what download data would do, it returns a task of string. Okay? So, and then it takes whatever URL or whatever. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the only difference is very similar, it takes the same arguments. The only difference is when you call it, it comes back immediately. It doesn't, you know, block on anything. It just comes back saying, all right, I'll go and get started on that, and here's the task. Here's your ticket for the wardrobe, right? So eventually when the thing is done, this is where you get the result. And so I can call that, I get a task back, and I can hold on to that. I can go on with other business if I want to. I can hand it out to other people who might eventually be interested in the result. I can do whatever I want with this task. It's a complete abstraction of the work that this thing is doing. But I can also immediately sit and wait for it. Like, I can do whatever I want.
Okay. Yes.
The easiest thing, like, typically, you'll have written a program, you'll have written your method synchronously to figure out how it should work, and now you're like, oh, but it blocks all the time, I'm sitting here waiting. How can I rewrite it so that it's asynchronous, so that my UI thread, for instance, I would be calling this, isn't blocked for you know, seconds at a time, and your mouse can't move, and so on.
Yeah.
So how can I do that? And even without any language features, you can do callback-based programming with tasks. You could go up to the task. So let me call this.
Mm-hmm.
So we say var. Let's use our good old var feature here, var t. Now I get a task equals, you know, my client dot download async with whatever URLs and stuff we need here. So now I have the task. And now I could immediately turn around and say var data equals t dot result. That's a method that already exists on task today, and it'll block my thread until I get the result. So that's not very useful because I'm still blocking.
Yes.
But what's nice about it is that I can completely retain my program structure around this. If I sit in a loop and do this, you know, some kind of for each loop here, and do this multiple times, I can easily do that. The problem is if I want to go callback-based, what I have to do is to say t dot continue with, and then I pass it a callback. So I can walk up to a task and say, when you're done, pass the result to this piece of code, and now give me back a task that represents that other thing I'm doing. But that means I don't get the data back here. Instead, I have to do something in here that consumes the data. So to simplify a little, mm-hmm. I have to put a lambda or something that takes the data and consumes it. Mm-hmm. Okay, but how about my for each loop now? I don't want the next crank of the for each loop to happen until I actually receive the data. So I can't program with the for each loop anymore. I have to remove this and then sort of put the next turn of the crank in here where I do the next my client download async. So I kind of get a so there I have to, in my callback, I have to go and call this method again and sort of do a recursive style kind of programming around it, which is the more programming structure you have to unfold. Think about error handling, think about conditionals, all that kind of stuff. Exception, you know, try catch blocks. Everything I had around my code before, I now have to somehow turn inside out and put into the callback. Sucks. Okay? So on top of this model, even though the task-based model in itself is simpler than what we have today there, it makes programming with asynchrony much simpler. It's still essentially callback-based.
Sure.
And nothing we can do in the framework can help that. Mm. It's just fundamentally not a framework problem to deal with that. It can't be done. Right? We have to deal with it at some other level of abstraction, and since we're language folks, we like doing it in the language.
Good. Excellent.
So what you can do instead now is to... I shouldn't have erased that much, should I? once you have your task, var t equals whatever here. Mm-hmm. So I called download data async. I immediately got a task back. What I can say now under certain circumstances is I can say var data equals await. So here comes the new flashy keyword.
Yes.
Await t, right? Hmm. Or to abbreviate, I could just say, you know, I could drop the temporary here and just say await my client dot download data async. Okay?
Okay.
So I get a task back and I immediately await it. Okay, what does that mean? That's where it gets a little magical, right? So you can't always say await. You can only say await when you're inside of an asynchronous method. Okay? So what is this method we're doing? Maybe, you know, I don't know what we're going to call this method.
Get channel 9 data.
Get channel 9 data. I like that. So it's called get C9 data async. Okay? Because that's sort of the convention. Async methods have async postfix here. And maybe there's some URLs coming in or whatever that we can then reach over.
Okay.
This has to be an asynchronous method. So it too, like the download data async, returns a task. And... it could be a task of something if there's a result here, or maybe, you know, so task of whatever. But then we also say that it's an async method. That's the other new keyword in C#.
There it is. Okay.
This method is async. It's got nothing to do with its observable shape from the outside, mm-hmm. but async means I can put a wait inside of it, essentially.
Okay. Interesting.
So an asynchronous method can have a wait inside of it. And what's more, an asynchronous method will itself generate the resulting task here. Hmm. What essentially an asynchronous method allows you to do is write your code as usual, put a few awaits in there, and return the result at the end, and it will turn the result into a task.
Hmm.
Okay? A little weird still. Let's for each it. For each URL in URLs, you know, there's a var in here and so on. Now I can say var data equals await my client DDA thing. I don't know, I do something to add it to the result or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, I can say return result, whatever result I built.
Okay.
So my method looks completely like before. Instead, except for the fact that I await an asynchronous method call instead of just calling a synchronous method here. Now, what happens?
Yes.
What happens? What happens is that when you start executing this method, you call it, it starts executing like normal. It goes into the for each loop, and then it gets to it calls this method here, you get a task back, and then we get to the magic. We get to the await keyword. The first await keyword, it says, okay, I'm in an asynchronous method. I'm awaiting a task here. It's not ready. The task isn't complete yet. So what do I do?
Yeah.
I return to my caller. I build a task, and I return to the caller immediately. I don't go on from here. My thread doesn't sit and wait. I just returned whoever called me, and I hand him a task that the compiler built that represents the ability to, at some point in the future, get the result. Mm. And then I do, you know, that's it. Except, just before I left, I signed up a callback, a special magical compiler-generated callback to the task that I got back from this guy, saying, hey, yo, task, when you're complete, like when the download data async task is complete, please invoke this callback. Mm. And what that callback does is go right back into my method and start executing it from here where we left off. So it kind of, it stores the state of the execution that we were in. Like mid-flight, in the middle of the method, it says, suspend right here, pass a callback to the task we're waiting for, and when that callback comes back, resume execution from here. And then it, you know, so it goes and loops around in the for each again after we've awaited. So this task completes much, much later. Maybe it reawaits the method. It comes back around the for each loop and it gets to another await. Does the same thing again. Mm. Sign up, callback, return, get off the thread, you know.
Yeah.
Get out of business until that next task resumes it and so on.
Interesting.
At the end, it gets to a return statement here.
Mm-hmm.
That return statement, it can't return to the original caller of the method. We already returned to that guy long ago with a task.
Mm.
He's already off doing something else, or maybe he's awaiting.
Yeah.
He's also in an asynchronous method, right?
Okay.
So what return means here is go to that task that we returned originally mm-hmm. and complete it. Tell everybody who's waiting for it, now we're done. Now the result is there. Now you can move on.
Excellent.
With your business. So that's the mechanism in a nutshell.
Excellent. So let me ask a quick question. I mean, when you were talking in the terminology of wait and stuff, is this at all sort of related to promises? So in other words, you guarantee
yeah.
me that you're going to complete, right?
Well,
I mean, it's not to be too technical, but that's what came to my mind. So I'm of course throwing that out there.
Yeah, I think there are lots of terms flying around. We
yeah.
call them tasks.
Sure.
They're roughly equivalent to what a lot of people call futures.
There you go. All right.
They're also roughly equivalent to promises, though you sometimes use those in a slightly different way. There's
sure.
still the same idea of an object that represents something that ain't ready yet. So it is a promise, right? It is
yeah.
it's a ticket to the future. Right?
Yeah.
When you have it, it's a handle to what hopefully one day will complete a result and give it to me.
Okay.
And that's exactly how we use it, yeah.
And so one of the questions I have is when typically what people do in asynchronous client programming is they want to get feedback at all, you know, at intervals of computation so that they can make a little progress bar or they
yeah.
can say, we'll be done in 25 seconds. You can still do that with this. I mean, you just pass. Let's talk about that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you'd have to write your own event handler. I mean, you're not, I mean, obviously. And then to that you would attach the async method here, right? Mm-hmm. The task
yes.
that gets returned back to the caller immediately. Right.
Right. So we can. So if you want to speak about event handlers, like you don't actually in an asynchronous method, you don't have to return a task necessarily. You can also just say void here, which means you have the ability to fit event handlers, which always are void returning. Right?
Sure.
So you can write an event handler this way, and what that means is you write a bunch of code here. Nobody can later await it. Like it's fire and forget, as we sometimes call it.
Mm.
An event handler that works this way, mm-hmm. will, you know, it'll execute synchronously up until the first await, then it'll return to whoever invoked it, which was, you know, some event happened mm-hmm. somewhere in the bowels of WPF or something.
Uh-huh.
This event got invoked. And from the point of view of WPF, that's it. Like, it invoked the event, it's done, it came back quickly, thank God, so we can stay responsive.
Mm.
Now, what'll happen later is that as the awaited task comes back, it'll resume the method, so it'll get back on the UI thread, and we can talk a little about how it does that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll get back on the UI thread with sort of what we call the continuation, the next bit that will execute of this method. So after mouse events and things have been able to fly freely for a bit,
mm-hmm.
And this thing completes, it puts the next little bit of computation on the, you know, the message queue for the UI thread. It makes its way to the front,
mm-hmm.
gets scheduled, does its little thing until it hits the next await. So it only borrows the CPU and the UI thread for that little bit of time until it hits the next await. And then it goes off, signs up a new callback, gets off the UI thread, lets other things in. So
mm-hmm.
your app can stay responsive, and it just trickles in little pieces of work whenever it needs the CPU for a little bit, or it needs to update some UI with progress, for instance. Mm-hmm. It comes back and does that through the queue and just signs up work for later as a callback to whatever task it's awaiting now.
Okay. So let's, since this is going deep, and you're Mads Torgersen, of course, I mean, this is Channel 9, so there'll be some randomness in introductions, but my assumption is that everyone knows who you are. I mean, clearly you're one of the guys who's driving the C-sharp design. You're Danish. You're a comp sci professor. You were at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're a good friend of Eric Myers.
That too.
And so I might channel him a little bit and ask about RX. Or reactive programming.
Absolutely.
But in some sense, I just want to get that out there. So this is great. Let's look at async. Can we talk about how it's implemented? Or is that sort of... Because you've already talked about what it means and what it does.
Yeah.
But let's crack into that word.
Right.
What does it do?
Right. So, so let's detail this messy example a little bit and just say that you do something with the UI here, because then it's kind of neater to talk about. So let's say that you have some kind of thingy, my status dot text equals something, right? So you do some kind of status update in the for each loop, saying, you know, now I got this, now I got this.
Sure.
You put out the title of the first 100 bytes of what you just downloaded or whatever, right? So so let's talk about how this actually works. There are a couple of different components here, so I'll talk about them one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing in the ambient context, so to speak, of a thread. There's something that you can always get for a thread, which is its synchronization context.
Okay.
All threads already have... they typically have a synchronization context, which is sort of an abstraction over the place you're running. Okay. Now, what the async feature does whenever it hits an await is it doesn't just sign up a callback that runs the rest of the method on whatever thread happens to be the one that picks it up. Like,
mm-hmm.
typically, if you're going to the web, then the thing that initiates the result handling is what we call an I/O completion thread. And that's just a random thread that's listening on a port, and when something comes in, it handles it. It has handlers registered. And we don't want that thread to be occupied with doing whatever business logic we have. And we also particularly don't want it when we're doing UI stuff, because that thread is not the UI thread, and it's not permitted to change the UI. You get a crash, right? So it'd be kind of strange if you came here on the UI thread, and then you await something, and then when you come back, you're on some other random thread that can't update the UI anymore. Right?
Yeah.
That sucks. However, the synchronization context you're on here says it knows that it's the UI thread. And so what we do when we come back from the I/O completion, for instance, is we look at what was your synchronization context before. We walk up to it, and we say, can you please run this on this synchronization context? So in this case, we will be asking the UI thread to please run this. So what the UI thread's synchronization context will do is to put this piece of work on its message queue, sending it through the pump and out to the UI thread whenever it gets its turn. So that's how we kind of like stay in the same place.
Okay.
Not all synchronization contexts represent a single thread. If you go to the thread pool, for instance, which is where you'll run all kind of background work, you can come back on any... the synchronization context will put us back on any old thread pool thread that happens to be available.
Okay.
You get queued and you get whichever one is ready. So there you can actually experience with this feature that every await puts you on a new thread. They're going to be very similar. They're all going to be thread pool threads. But if you rely on thread local state or something like that, you get screwed. Like this feature does not respect thread affinity in that sense. You can't trust it to do. Only if the synchronization context is a single thread one.
Mm.
Now, that's one part of it. That kind of tells you how do we get back where we were. How do we ensure that you can keep using UI features, for instance.
Okay.
Or in ASP.NET, if you're using this on the server side, how do we ensure that you stay within the same sort of sequential execution of a given request?
Yes.
Same thing, through the synchronization context.
Okay.
The other thing, like how does this work, that people might ask is what does the compiler do to make this feature available? Like normally when you call a method, you know, you can't just like hop off the thread in mid-flight and then come back later. Like what do we do? What how do we mangle the code under the hood so this is actually possible?
Yes.
The first short answer is we do pretty much the same as we do with iterators, which is the language feature that C# has had since C# 2.0, which allows you to lazily generate collections by having yield returns inside of the method that will say, here comes the next result, and then it'll just pause the execution of the method until somebody asks for the next result. So we already have a feature in C# that allows you to partially execute a method, then hop out and come back later.
Okay.
We do that by building a state machine object behind the scenes that represents the execution of the method as an object that keeps track of where are we, what's the state of the local variables. These are then really hidden fields of that object and so on. So we build a state machine object behind the scenes and we transform the code so that you can, whenever you resume it, you're able to jump right back into where you were before. Okay, so think of the code that really gets generated here as having a big switch up in front that says, what is my state? Oh, I'm in state 7. Okay, that means I have to go to this point in the code.
You said the magic word. I was just going to say that. Sort of like a go-to.
Yes, it's a big switch with go-tos.
Excellent.
Isn't that wonderful?
It is. It's crazy, but wonderful.
Go-to is beautiful as long as our compiler is generating it and not you.
Totally.
Okay?
Yes.
So that's how it works.
Interesting.
And then there are lots of little details about, as you can see, a wait is actually an expression. It takes a task of T and returns a T. And what if it happens in the middle of some bigger expression? Mm-hmm. Then implementing it is hard. It's much harder than implementing iterators. But that's all for us to deal with. You have things on the stack. You need to get them off the stack because you're not coming back for a while. And then you have to put them back on the stack. And all kinds of deep implementation stuff. Mm-hmm. We take care of that. And you just really have to think about using the await keyword whenever you attempted to wait for something that is asynchronous, and that will put a great big hole in your thread usage here. Mm. So on the surface, you get this, you get this asynchrony kind of for free.
So this is a cool pattern because again, you guys have sort of abstracted away complexity to make it easier for composers to get their work done, right? And in some sense, my question for you would be, what does this mean for exceptions, right? So exceptions happening asynchronously have always been complicated to deal with. Mm.
So this isn't actually a big deal. It's not a big deal at all.
Excellent.
What does it mean for exceptions? Now, I left myself only very little space here because this has been here on the whiteboard for months, I should say.
But the wait is over for a wait.
Maybe I should erase it now. The wait is over for a wait, yeah. So Let's do something with exception handling. So let's say there's a great big try block around this and a catch down here. If an exception happens inside of this call here, if this completes normally, await will will take the result and return that as part of its semantics, right? So the value of this task here when it completes will be the one that gets assigned to data. Now, if you don't get a value but you get an exception, then equally, a wait is the thing that sort of brings the exception into our world. Okay, so a task can wrap a result or an exception. That's one of the wonderful things about tasks is that they handle exceptions as well. Mm. They can represent an exceptional result. So whenever we await a task that's faulted, that has an exception, then a wait blows up and rethrows that exception in our scope, and we can catch it out here.
Excellent.
So you can have, it's one of the things that's really hard with asynchronous programming today. You can just have try-catch blocks that span awaits, and that works totally fine. Wherever the exception happens in your own code, in something in a task that's awaited, wherever, you just catch that exception, deal with it. If you don't have try-catches around it, what happens with the exception that gets thrown in here? Well, it gets wrapped up into the exception into the task that we produce, right? Mm. So our task will eventually blow up with an exception, and whoever's waiting for it will get that exception. If they await that, then they get that exception thrown. So exceptions are propagated in much the same way as on a synchronous stack.
Excellent.
That it's surprisingly simple, actually. As long as you stay sequential here, That's a fun thing about it. So the first step, we've really only taken the first step in using await here. I can tell you about the next one in a minute.
Cool.
If you have time.
Of course.
As long as you just take the first step and take your sequential code and make it asynchronous, everything pretty much stays the same. Except now you have to await the result in another asynchronous method instead of getting it directly. Now, of course, this opens, like once you've done this, you can start thinking, okay, so I'm sitting here in a loop and I'm downloading stuff sequentially. Like, I actually await the download of one thing before I start downloading the next. So I'm taking all these round trips to the web sequentially. That's going to take a lot of time. That's not very efficient. Like, wouldn't it be cool if I could kick off all those downloads immediately?
Yes.
And then await them all later. Wouldn't that be awesome? So that would be parallelism without concurrent threads, right?
Mm-hmm.
Parallelism all on the UI thread. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
And of course you can do that, right? Because nobody says that you have to await a task as soon as you get it back. Right? You can start off a bunch of asynchronous operations, gather up the tasks, keep them in a list, and then await them later. Actually, one of the new methods on the task type that we'll introduce is called when all. So you can say, let me just do it over here.
Mm-hmm.
If you can,
I can get over there.
Reach me.
Sure.
So you can say task dot when all, and then you can give it a collection of tasks. Right. So here comes an enumerable of tasks that, you know, is an array we just gathered up of tasks we started, or maybe we used the link query to do it or whatever. Like,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden we find ourselves with a bucket of tasks that all represent ongoing downloads. Like, they're all out there doing their stuff.
Mm.
And the when all method, what will it do? It will produce, the when all method is also asynchronous. It returns immediately when you call it.
Mm.
What does it return? Well, it returns a task that you can await that completes when all of these are complete.
Mm.
When all.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you can use that to start all these tasks, then you can know when they're all done. And then you can run through them and grab the results.
Nice.
Okay? And you, with very simple, just this very simple step, you parallelized your web access. And you're still not out there using tons of thread pool threads. You just, because there's no CPU work to parallelize. It's all just the network I/O that's being parallelized, right?
Interesting.
So very, very simple to parallelize your code, which is the typical next step you'll want to do. You'll look at your newly asyncified code. You're like, okay, now my UI is responsive, but it's still slow. Like, it's still, the download's still slow. Why don't I parallelize this? And now it's both fast and responsive.
Absolutely. Now, this actually is a really good server-side scenario, given sort of the plethora of services. So I make a request to one server. I then have this code run, calls a bunch of different servers, aggregates it all back into a task, sends it back down to the caller.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the caller is doing all kinds of
things. When you have services that themselves use services, like aggregators is a typical example here, but you can have all kinds of things. And maybe, so this is a very simple example, you just start a bunch of things in parallel and aggregate them, and it's all kind of very neat and regular, symmetric, if you will. But you can also have situations where there's more logic, like you start one thing and then given some condition, you start another thing, and then when that one comes back, you start a third thing while this other's running. And you can have more programming logic around it. And it's just a matter of where you grab your tasks and where you put your awaits. You can just totally control that with normal control flow.
Wow.
And on the server side, you have the benefit that it's very easy to parallelize without using existing threads. Like, threads are often the scarce resource. They're often the bottleneck in server-side scenarios. Threads are expensive on our system. Then they're really not meant for like teeny little jobs. They're meant for big haul stuff.
Yes.
So you don't want to waste your threads, as I said before, just staring down a pipe for a result. You want them to do work. And this is, on a server like this, wasting threads can really mean, hey, I max out the server, I have to buy more boxes, right? It's real money.
Yeah.
Or I have to rent more time on Azure or whatever.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Or more, it's, threads are money.
Yes.
In the server world often, right? And so if we can help our customers reduce the thread footprint, which they can do by a lot with asynchronous stuff in the server world, we can help ourselves make less money on our data centers, I guess.
What's going on? See, we're not evil. We're not evil.
We're saving the environment, right?
Yes.
I mean, we're burning less power in those data centers, man. Yep. I mean, seriously, this can reduce the load on CPUs and the amount of power we burn. This can have an environmental impact if you think about it.
Absolutely. So I want to ask a question because the additions here are in terms of the language constructs, async and await. Await has to happen inside an async block.
Yeah.
So the question I have, you said, you know, we're talking a lot about tasks because they make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you also mentioned that you can use async on anything. Is that true? You didn't say anything. You said
it didn't
have to be a task.
Right.
So what I'm asking is,
okay, so it has to
be other types.
Right. So when you're writing an asynchronous method, you have two choices essentially. Like, do you want people to be able to wait for it to complete or not?
Mm-hmm.
If you want people to be able to wait for it to complete, or if it has a result, even get that, then you make it return task. If it's intended for fire and forget, which is when you write an event handler, then you put void, and those are your options.
Okay.
You know, void, task, or task of T. No other options apply.
Sure.
And so the void thing is typically the thing you'll have at the top. If you think about tasks, what they're good for is some other asynchronous method is consuming that task, directly through a wait or indirectly through a when all that is then awaited, or like there's someone consuming that task, waiting for it, composing your functionality with other functionality that's also represented with tasks. So tasks are really good for composing. When you get to the top level, that you just want to start something, and it can go and compose its tasks or whatever, but nobody calling that are interested in waiting for the result.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you put voids. So that's typically the top level. That's where you'll typically start off something asynchronous in a non-asynchronous context.
Mm.
Synchronous context.
Okay.
So those are your options. It's not that you can't return random other stuff, because how would you?
Yeah.
By the time, you know, when you get to the first await and you want to return to the customer, how do you return that string that you promised them? You don't have it yet.
Yeah.
You have to return something that's deferred, which
sure.
is what the task represents.
But you can have a task return string.
The task?
Yes.
Can be a task.
So, I mean, that's the point. The thing would be, when people see the async keyword, I could see people wanting to write async, you know, my method that returns a string or returns a number. I do some sort of, I go make a call to a math web service and I want mm-hmm. it to be done asynchronously, so I'll use the async keyword. That's all I meant. So
yeah.
It's tied to task and void, and then of course await is what you use.
Yes. And again, the async keyword doesn't mean anything to the caller. Like, we're probably not even going to show it in metadata.
Ah, okay.
To the caller, it doesn't mean anything that it says async. It just means something what it returns. If it returns task, then from a caller's viewpoint, it's asynchronous. It doesn't matter whether it was actually async and had awaits in it, or whether it used one of the static methods on the task type to create a task and then return it. It can do whatever it wants, and the client shouldn't care. So the client never cares whether it's async or not. It's in that sense, it's not a real modifier. It doesn't say anything to the client of the method. It only says something about how is the body implemented. It's kind of like unsafe in that sense, that it just says something about what's allowed inside, not what gets exposed.
It lets the compiler know that it's going to be that what the compiler needs to generate.
Yeah, it lets the compiler know that this is the intent. Yeah.
Yes, and let's speak about the intent real quickly as we wind down. It sounds to me that what's happening is sort of an execution model where there's pause, resume, in actually the code flow, the code execution.
Yeah.
What does this mean for performance? Nothing? I mean, you guys have to be generating new threads, or a new thread, right?
No.
Okay.
No. Part of the
perfect.
Part of the cool thing here is there is no new thread.
Okay.
It's all, you know, sort of, we're just borrowing little slices of time here and there. At the point where But while you're awaiting,
okay.
no thread is harmed during this process. No thread is
you know, that's good.
You, of course, for when you're executing your little pieces of code between the resume and the pause,
mm-hmm.
that has to run on some thread.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And the way we determine what thread is, we ask the synchronization context you came from. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we ask the UI, if we were in the UI one, we say, can you please run this code at your next convenience?
Mm-hmm.
And the way it'll do it is put it on a queue, and then when when it's your turn to spend a little time on the UI thread, you do spend time on the UI thread. And that's the amount of thread that it costs, so to speak.
Okay.
Right. But in between, in those long pauses that may be like 98% of your existence, of your lifetime, no thread is involved. Mm. That's the beauty of it. So that's a big saving. Mm-hmm. That's why this can help servers scale. Mm-hmm. There's still some cost involved, of course, and like we have to take the method and we have to represent it as an object, so there's more allocation going on.
Okay.
There's a little bit of stuff involved in the suspending and resuming, mm-hmm. which has a cost, right? And and if you suspend and immediately resume on the UI thread, well, there's all this mechanism about getting back on the queue and getting back in. And it all costs a little. Mm-hmm. So we do, in fact, like if you want to go deep into implementation,
yes.
there is a little optimization in there, which is not quite an optimization because you can see it, and optimizations aren't supposed to be visible. But there's a thing we do when we generate the code that when we await something, we do actually check if it's already there, and if it is, we do not return. Right? Mm-hmm. We do not install a callback and come back later. Instead, we just grab the result and keep going.
Right? Okay.
So people can sometimes get surprised by that if they sit in a big loop where they, like here, where they await 10,000 things. If all those 10,000 things were already available, you would execute completely synchronously, mm-hmm. which, you know, in pathological circumstances could still hork your UI thread, mm-hmm. in which case we have little outs. Like you can have, there's a task that yield. Sorry, that wasn't black.
No worries, we can see it.
There's a task that yield asynchronous method that will return you something that when you await it, it will yield control, it will return, but it'll immediately come back. So there are little ways that if you end up having these pathological cases where you're never yielding, you will do so. But we do that so that you can save the resources when there's no need. Like when you already have the result available in the task, it's already complete, no reason to put on the big show. Like, let's just grab the result and keep going.
Excellent. So my final question would be, so the compiler generates IL. So the IL is going to have this information in it, and it's going to look like something.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have the jitter running over the IL. My question is, have there any optimization logic added to the JIT to deal with this?
No.
Was there anything added to the CLR to deal with this?
No.
So basically, you use iterators as your foundational.
Same core technology as we use for iterators. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. It's not actually iterators underneath, but they kind of share the same technique, implementation technique.
Excellent.
It's all in the compiler, right? And then in the beautiful workings of the task type that are already there,
yep.
and with some added stuff to it in this proposed version.
Excellent. So. Developers start playing around with this. They can download the CTP. They probably already have downloaded it. And, of course, they can ask questions on your forums and Channel 9. And
absolutely.
We can forward them to you directly.
Well, hit us with it, because this is the first public exposure of it.
Yeah.
And we think we got it right.
Yeah.
But we couldn't talk to a lot of actual users out there about it, because it was secret until now.
Yeah.
And so now this is our first coming out, and the feedback we can get is really important. Mm-hmm. We suspect that there's a lot of things that people will, you know, need a little work to understand. Mm-hmm. And so there may be a lot of feedback saying, this isn't intuitive. So that's one kind of feedback that we like getting. Once you kind of get, okay, this is how it actually works. Also the kind of feedback saying, I totally get it. I totally get how I should use it. And still it sucks here and here and here. That's also very valuable feedback.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, hey, man, congratulations, because, I know you guys have been working on this for a while, and it's a hard problem, and, you know, clearly, you know, for developers, it's all about, you know, the cloud is the future, right? And that's how you program the cloud. You program asynchronously, right?
I think that's fair
to say. So yeah. Asynchronous programming is going to become increasingly more important. So this is good stuff for C# and VB.net.
It's going to be fun.
Developers. Great to talk to you again. We'll see you again, because we're going to meet the team.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be fun to talk about design decisions and, you know, where you were and where you are.
Right.
Thanks for spending time with us, Matt. It's always great to see you, man.
Thank you.
Cheers. All right. So we turn the camera off. And as usual in these, you know, people may not realize this, but we always have great conversations when the camera goes off. In this case, I want to record this. So
uh-huh.
Tell me what we were just talking about.
Well, yeah, sure. So So this is more a philosophical point.
Yeah.
It's deep in a different way than the technical stuff. But the thing I think we have realized about asynchrony is it's one of those things that you want it to be easy, but you don't want it to be transparent.
Okay.
Right. So there's been a lot of work about how can I do distributed programming in a way that I totally don't know. Like the programmer doesn't care if things are running locally or remotely, if there's like you know, a nanosecond or 10 seconds of delay, of latency and that kind of stuff. And I think whenever people have tried to completely make it go away in the name of making it easy, they fail. Because there's so many things that are different when you're in a distributed world, when you're talking over the network, and so on. The new failure modes, like things don't come back, you don't know what's, you know, don't know where they're at in there, you know, where did this disappear to in the internet, how long should I wait, timeouts, all that kind of stuff that you don't deal with locally. So you need this kind of thing to be explicit in your code, and that's what we're trying to get to with the explicit task. Like we don't pretend it returns int and then just have the consumers magically wait or something like that. Mm-hmm. We don't hide the asynchrony itself. We make it very explicit through the tasks. What we hide is just the tedious work of describing your flow.
Okay. Right?
And so we're trying to strike that balance between these two historical opposites of having very tedious, very hard to do, very different distributed programming, versus having complete transparency on the distribution axis. This is, we think, a happy medium, where you can just await my client download the data thing, and it looks like sequential code, but you can also grab the task, do something else for a while, and then await it. So you can break in to the smooth over layer here and do your thing with that explicit task.
Excellent.
You know, you can ask it, did you have any exceptions? You can do all kinds of stuff with it.
Perfect.
And you not just like handle more error cases, but you also get these new opportunities where you go parallel, for instance. Because you get the task in your hand, you can do other things with it than just await it. You can break out of the sequentialism and so on. So that was the point that
we missed
in the first recording.
No, but you know, it's important that we get that point out there.
That is.
This is great stuff, man.
Cool.
Take care.
Thanks.